each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in once again to The Winds of Change. It's Wednesday, so that means you have Father Tom Coy's brain wrinkler extraordinaire. I have a few things we've got to cover. Indeed, indeed. Thank you all. Got a few things to cover. I took you to this very wonderful discussion of the Inquisition. So we got to finish that up. And then obviously vaccines is on everybody's mind. I'm going to share with you a very well-written letter by a college student who is being forced, as we say, to take an experimental drug into her body, which turns her into a guinea pig, as it were. And so I want to share that with you. And this coming Sunday is Father's Day, and we all have good memories of our father, some strange memories of our father. I have to share with you a little poem that I put together for my dad. We'll get to that. Okay, so different things to get into today. Let's go back to the Inquisition. If you were listening the other times, I didn't get to explain what...
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, there you go. We do need a boat. I didn't get to explain that the major reason the Inquisition was started was not for heretics that we usually think of them as, especially described in modern American or English history, which would be the heirs of the Protestants. It was for the Jews who lived in Spain, who would convert to Catholicism, or not so much convert, be a fake Catholic, while not believing in the fullness of Catholicism, remaining a Jew, as it were. And those were called the conversos. So the main reason, here, I'm going to keep reading from this powerful article, okay? We got the early stages of the Spanish Inquisition. The old Christians and Jews used the tribunals as weapons against their conversos enemies. So old Christians were just Spanish Catholics that were never Jews, of course, just Spanish Catholics, you could say, old Christians. And the Jews who didn't pretend to or didn't convert to Catholicism, I don't want to stick that pretend in there too much, because as I mentioned last in episode 2, that a lot of the Jewish people who embraced Christ as the Messiah took a great pride in their being Jewish, and their pride in accepting Christ. So a lot of the Jewish people who accepted Christ were really good Catholics. So, but this problem comes up of what about the ones who weren't so good? So the Inquisition's sole purpose was to investigate conversos, as they were called. The old Christians had nothing to fear from the Inquisition. Their fidelity to the Catholic faith was not under investigation, although it was far from pure, we could say. They were sometimes good Catholics, sometimes bad Catholics, but the Inquisition was only trying to smoke out the fake Catholics who were of Jewish ancestry. Okay, we got that. And for the Jews who didn't convert, they were immune from the Inquisition also because they weren't pretending to be Catholic. So remember, the purpose of an Inquisition was to find and correct the lost sheep of Christ's flock. It had no jurisdiction over other flocks, namely the folks that hung around the synagogues, the Jewish people. So today, people who get their history from Mel Brooks' History of the World or Monty Python, I don't have those clips here right handy, but I used them before, right? You can remember those. I think many of you do remember them. They are funny, but they're poor, poor history. Those kind of people who get their history from TV like that will be surprised to learn that all of those Jews enduring various tortures in the dungeons of the Spanish Inquisition are nothing more than a product of Mel Brooks' fertile imagination. Spain's Jews had nothing to fear from the Spanish Inquisition. Let's get that straight. If they were Jewish, they were left to be Jewish. There wasn't a concern about a kind of hypocrisy or deception, especially deception so as to gain favor with others in a more worldly, materialistic way. So in the early, rapidly expanding years, there was plenty of abuse and confusion with the tribunals, the Inquisitions. Most accused conversos were acquitted, but not all. The well-publicized burnings, often because of blatantly false testimony, justifiably frightened other conversos. Those with enemies often fled town before they could be denounced. Everywhere they looked, the inquisitors found more accusers. As the Inquisition expanded into Aragon, the hysteria levels reached new heights. Pope Sixtus IV tries to intervene because he's hearing these bad stories coming from Spain. On April 18th, 1482, okay, 10 years before Columbus sailed the ocean blue, right?
Danger, Will Robinson! Danger! No, Will Robinson! Danger! Yeah.
Indeed, there was danger about, and the Pope, as Pope, was doing his popely duty to try to help correct things. He wrote to the bishops of Spain, and here's this powerful letter, which throws great skepticism over the modern narrative of the Inquisition being such a terrible part of Catholic tradition or Catholic history. Pope Sixtus IV writes to the bishops in Spain, well, can't say Spain. Notice, I can't say Spain because Spain didn't exist as a nation. I like this theme that I have to repeat over and over again when I say, what is the older nation? The United States or Italy? And people say, oh, Italy is much older. No, it's not. And even Spain didn't become a nation. I can't remember the exact year when it was unified, but before the unification, it was these different provinces, and they were sometimes called states. So the state of Aragon, the state of Valencia, Mallorca, and Catalonia. Aragon and Catalonia were the two famous ones. The others are smaller. Anyways, so Pope writes to the bishops of these places. So he says, the Inquisition has for some time been moved not by zeal for the faith and the salvation of souls, but by lust for wealth.
Wow.
That's
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
The Pope is, I believe, acting like a true Christian and calling out the great misuse of a tribunal that had church approval for the time being. We're going to see how it drops it. So anyways, the Pope goes on, many true and faithful Christians on the testimony of enemies, rivals, slaves, and other lower and even less proper persons have without any legitimate proof been thrust into secular prisons, tortured, and condemned as relapsed heretics, deprived of their goods and property, and handed over to the secular arm to be executed, to the peril of souls, setting a pernicious example and causing disgust to many. Boy, isn't that, that's a nice, strong letter by the Pope pointing out that this use of a religious litmus test in order to advance your own political wealth, shall we say, is a powerful statement. And can't we see how we need this? We need to understand the right attitude and the right relationship between a religious litmus test and a public punishment, public imprisonment, or even worse, capital punishment. And we could see, I have to throw this into the hopper here, as we think of religious litmus test, I can't help but think of the phrase that's being kicked around today. Many in the church are saying, if a priest or a Eucharistic minister were to deny Holy Communion to someone they know is really acting in a tremendously anti-Catholic manner or disobeyed many of the Catholic principles or those who are not Catholic, and the priest or extraordinary minister of communion denied them Holy Communion, the accusation is raised that you are weaponizing the Eucharist for a political end. And I hope you could see the incredible, incredible difference between telling someone they shouldn't receive communion because of their notoriously anti-Catholic positions, promoting, especially in a political sense, and what the Inquisition was doing. You could say that the litmus is a religious litmus test to ask a Jewish person that since you converted to Christianity, you seem to be doing all these, you seem to be also going to the synagogue and professing your faith. And, well, I wonder how this would come down. If you profess your faith in Yahweh of the Old Testament, I, as a Catholic, wouldn't consider that a heresy. A Jewish person who confesses his faith in Yahweh of the Old Testament is a brother to me because I profess my faith in Yahweh of the Old Testament. It would have to have some kind of connection to a denial of Christ as the Messiah, right? All the positive beliefs that we get from the Old Testament are not abrogated, are not denied by Christ. Remember, he said, I come not to abolish the old law, but to fulfill them. So the litmus test that we're talking about in the Inquisition for the conversos is incredibly different than a litmus test for receiving communion today. And the form of discipline is as different as night and day. Thrown into jail, or in the radical sense executed there. No one denies that there were some executions back in those days, but certainly not by the hand of the church. That's what we're going to find out. That's the key thing. You know, as I'm on this topic of denying communion to someone who shouldn't be receiving communion, to say to someone, do not approach the communion, do not approach the altar. I almost said communion rail. Some churches do have communion rails, of course, but many don't. But anyways, to say that not to receive communion is hardly throwing someone into prison. And that we can't do that is kind of like parents who are trying to discipline their children just with words. You know, parents have to discipline their children from time to time, and they will say, they will try to correct them and use non-punitive methods, of course, first, right? You say, John, I don't want you stealing from your mother's purse. and you try to convince him of the rightness of the seventh commandment or whatever other such crime or sin we're talking about. But there comes a time when someone is persistent and your words have to be backed up with some kind of discipline. And so the fact that many bishops today are so hesitant about even the slightest form of discipline are kind of like those parents who are just screaming or maybe yelling or saying, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. But if they keep doing it, there's no consequence. There's no discipline imposed, as it were. And so just to say that is a weaponizing of the Eucharist is it's a strange concept where if a parent were doing that, and going back to my example, let us say a parent said to their son, and he was stealing from his mother's purse, and then you said, okay, son, you are not going out this weekend, or I'm taking your phone away, or if he's old enough, you can't borrow the car, one of those things. Is the parent weaponizing the car keys for his political purpose of trying to protect his wife's money from being stolen from her purse, right? It just doesn't make sense in the context of the right and responsibility of an elderly, of a person in authority over others to only try to guide or form a person with only words and never any actions. So, okay, let's go back to the Spanish Inquisition, and we have Pope Sixtus IV. He's trying to convince the bishops in Spain to do something about it. So Pope Sixtus orders the bishops to take a direct role in the future tribunals because the bishops were letting the noblemen kind of run the tribunals. The Pope wanted the bishops to ensure that the church's well-established norms of justice were respected. The accused were to have legal counsel and the right to appeal their case to Rome. So it makes a much different understanding of what's going on than what we used to have.
So you just wrinkled my brain, man.
Well, I just scratched the surface here of part three of our three-part series on the Inquisition. Let's take a break here as the hour rushes along. This is Father Tom Coyes sitting in for Father Anthony Bush, and you are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through 8th grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Okay, I'm trying to help us understand what really happened in Spain and in Europe with the Spanish Inquisition. There's a lot of myths to be cleared up. So we got the Pope trying to tell the bishops to watch over the tribunals, which were mostly run by merchants and noblemen who had all sorts of fights between themselves. And they were primarily to investigate the Jewish people who said they were Catholic, but were kind of ruining Catholicism by not really believing in the divinity of Christ. So let's go on. So here we are. Now the Pope writes to the bishops, and but the King Ferdinand, gets wind of this, of course, and he is outraged when he heard of the Pope's letter. So he calls his scribe and says, let's fire off a letter to Mr. Pope, Pope Sixtus. And so he's suggesting that the Pope has been bribed by the Conversos Gold. In other words, he's letting off the Jewish Catholics scot-free, so to speak. So this is what King Ferdinand writes. Things have been told me, Holy Father, which, if true, would seem to merit the greatest astonishment. To these rumors, however, we have given no credence, because they seem to be things which would in no way have been conceded by Your Holiness, who has a duty to the Inquisition. But if by chance concessions have been made through the persistent and cunning persuasion of the Conversos, I intend never to let them take effect. Take care, therefore, not to let the matter go further, and to revoke any concessions, and entrust us with the care of this question. How about that? So we got it is for the persecution of their enemies. See, you know, and that's the difference. Is it the enemy of the church or the enemy of the state? So that's why this is a key issue to think about and get right. And of course, for non-Catholics and non-Spaniards, especially those of English, French descent, and all those from America, doesn't matter if it was the Spanish king or the Spanish bishops who were doing the Inquisition. Spain, both civil and ecclesial, were guilty by association. If it came from Spain, it must be bad. So here we go. When King Ferdinand throws down the gauntlet, that was sort of the end of the papacy's role in the Spanish Inquisition. It would henceforth be an arm of the Spanish monarchy, separate from ecclesiastical authority. It is odd, then, that the Spanish Inquisition is so often today described as one of the Catholic Church's greatest sins. The Catholic Church as an institution had almost nothing to do with it. Okay, so the next year, in 1483, again, this is like just before Columbus set sail, King Ferdinand appoints a guy by the name of Tomás de Torquemada. Tomás de Torquemada. He was the Inquisitor General for most of Spain, or the provinces, the states of Spain. Spain didn't exist as a nation yet. It was Torquemada's job to establish rules of evidence and procedure for the Inquisition, as well as to set up branches in major cities. Pope Sixtus confirmed the appointment, hoping that it would bring some order to the situation. Well, unfortunately, the problem only snowballed. This was a direct result of the methods employed by the early Spanish Inquisition, which strayed significantly from church standards. When the inquisitors arrived in a particular area, they would announce an edict of grace. This was a 30-day period in which secret Jews could voluntarily come forward, confess their sin, and do penance. This was also a time for others, with information about Christians practicing Judaism in secret, to make it known to the tribunal. Those found guilty after 30 days elapsed could be burned at the stake. Isn't that, it's kind of funny, I couldn't help but remember during this edict, Christians would tell about other Christians who were practicing Judaism in secret. Reminds me, back in the seminary days, we would consider sort of treated to a Jewish Seder meal, a Jewish Seder meal. And of course, that's a Jewish practice. I could have been turned into the Inquisition because of that. It's a lot different now, huh? But really, a Christian has to practice a great deal of Judaism to be a Christian. Let's remember that. You have to follow the Ten Commandments, which obviously came from Moses. You wouldn't have to do all the ceremonial washings and all that. So, as I say, all the positive beliefs that are in the Old Testament, Catholicism continues. It's the major rejection on the part of the Jewish persons, the rejection of Christ and who he is as Messiah, that the real distinction between Jewish and Christianity comes into focus. Okay, back to the Inquisition and this wonderful article. For conversos, then, the arrival of the Inquisition certainly focused the mind, of course. The conversos generally had plenty of enemies. any one of whom might decide to bear false witness. Or perhaps their cultural practices were sufficient for condemnation? Well, who knew? Most conversos, therefore, either fled or lined up to confess. Those who did neither risked an inquiry in which any kind of heresy or evidence, no matter how old or suspicious, was acceptable. Isn't that a strange little point there, no matter how...
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Old. You know, he sat in a synagogue when a rabbi was preaching against Christ or something like that. That certainly would have been not the person sitting in the synagogue's fault, but guilt by association, right? There's no sense of lapse of time if this crime was 40 years ago, you won't be adjudicated for it. But those kind of laws were still developing, I guess. And maybe they were in the Catholic sense. So much of our laws are founded in Catholic history and Catholic canon law that is adapted to civil law. So anyways, opposition in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church to the Spanish Inquisition increased. Many churchmen in Rome and other places pointed out that what was going on in the Inquisition was contrary to all accepted practices for heretics. It was contrary to all accepted practices for heretics to be burned without instruction in the faith. And that's where my point comes in. That would be a beautiful consequence. You have somebody who's not a good Catholic, prefers his Jewish roots, and yet he's sort of halfway became Catholic. You'd want to instruct him on the faith. And what's beautiful about this story is that if a Jewish person were in that situation, and he half converted to Catholicism, thought it was a good idea, maybe it's good to be part of the culture, maybe good for business, what have you. And if throughout instructions, he'd say, I can't accept Christ as the Messiah. I can't accept Mary as his mother. All these things. The Catholic position would be to let the Jewish person go back to the faith that he did believe in, would not force him to become Catholic. So here we're going to get to that in just a little bit. If the conversos were guilty at all, it was merely of ignorance and not willful heresy. Numerous clergy at the highest levels complained to King Ferdinand. Opposition to the Spanish Inquisition also continued in Rome. Pope Sixtus's successor, Innocent VIII, wrote twice to the king asking for greater compassion, mercy, and lenience for the conversos, but to no avail. As the Spanish Inquisition picked up steam, those involved became increasingly convinced that Spain's Jews were actively seducing the conversos back into their old faith. It was a silly idea, no more real than the previous conspiracy theories. But Ferdinand and Isabella were influenced by it. Both of the monarchs had Jewish friends and confidants, but they also felt that their duty to their Christian subjects impelled them to remove the danger. What was the danger? The danger of Jewish so-called Catholics ruining the true Catholic faith, which would be a real danger, would it not?
Danger, Will happen. Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
So, actually, Queen Isabella's cause for canonization is up because she was so faithful. But this is probably the one Achilles heel that certainly has prevented her from becoming a canonized saint. So, it's in 1482. Ferdinand expelled the Jews from specific areas where the trouble seemed greatest. Over the next 10 years, though, they were under increasing pressure to remove the perceived threat. The Spanish Inquisition, it was argued, could never succeed in bringing the conversos back into the fold while the Jews undermined its work. Finally, on March 31st, 1492, the monarchs issued an edict expelling all Jews from Spain. Ferdinand and Isabella expected that their edict would result in the conversions of most of the remaining Jews in their kingdom, and they were largely correct. Many Jews in high positions, including those in the royal court, accepted baptism immediately. In 1492, the Jewish population of Spain numbered about 80,000. About half were baptized and thereby kept their property and livelihoods. The rest departed, but many of them eventually returned to Spain.
Wow.
They received baptism and had their property
restored.
You
just wrinkled my brain, man.
How about that? As far as the Spanish Inquisition was concerned, the expulsion of the Jews meant that the caseload of conversos was now much greater. Okay, well, it's time for another break, right, Nick? So we'll continue with this walk through history. And I hope you're making connections in your own mind about the poor treatment of the Catholic Church and perhaps the heirs of our Catholic Church, those who were Catholic, that were not listening to the Pope and not listening to the doctrines and the fullness of the faith. We'll have to say it that way. Anyways, let's take a quick break again. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush on these Wednesdays. This is listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Every parent has a dream of giving their children a great education and great faith. St. Stanislaus Kostka School, a nationally acclaimed Catholic leadership school, has made the dream easier for you to achieve. Here, leadership principles and lessons are an integral part of your child's coursework and school culture. Your child will study foreign languages, such as Mandarin, conduct experiments in real science labs, attend Eucharistic adoration, and more. Don't worry about affording a private education. St. Stanislaus Kostka School offers full tuition scholarships for kindergarten through eighth grade. Send your child to St. Stanislaus Kostka School, located just minutes from downtown Chicago. Dreams can come true, but you need to call today, 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyes here. I've got to try to zip through this very interesting article about the Spanish Inquisition. Got to get to a few other things here as well. Let's continue. The first 15 years of the Spanish Inquisition under the direction of Torquemada, they were the deadliest. There were about 2,000 conversos who were put to the flames. Isn't that sad? I wonder how many would have been saved if we had the modern day understanding of let's catechize you, let's help you understand better, and accept it or not. And if you don't accept it, you learn more deeply what it is to be Catholic. And if you don't accept it, then Just don't pretend to be Catholic. Go back to being Jewish. That's one of the caveats that the Pope was insisting on. If a Jewish conversos was confronted with his dual faith, shall we say, and that's even, it's a strange concept, isn't it? Because Catholicism is so rooted in Judaism, you have to sort of have a dual faith. But if you're being a hypocrite and you're ruining the faith of others, it certainly becomes a problem. But certainly, it's a sad chapter in our Catholic history. But it's we could see how the Church was trying to strong arm the civil authorities to do the right thing, and not weaponize the Inquisition. The Church was trying to keep it in proper perspective. And again, I repeat, if the inquisitors, according to following Pope's instructions, found a Jewish person who couldn't accept it, they'd say, okay, fine, just go back being a Jew, practice your Jewish faith. Just don't ruin our faith. And that's kind of what that issue with the pro-choice politicians is saying, isn't it? If you're not going to be a Catholic, then don't be two-faced about it, and just go practice some other religion. if you don't believe in the Catholic Church's teaching on marriage and life, find a church that preaches what you believe. But they don't, and so that's why there's so much opposition to that kind of behavior in the Church today. And I pray the bishops will help understand this mild form of discipline. I think they're too afraid of being accused of reinstating the Spanish Inquisition. They're too afraid of the accusations that will be waged, unfair accusations that, what are you going to do, bring back burning at the stake or what have you? Of course, that's not anywhere near a reasonable consequence. By about the year 1500, things did calm down. Torquemada's successor was a cardinal, the Archbishop of Toledo, Francisco Jimenez de Cisneros. He worked hard to reform the Inquisition, removing bad apples and reforming procedures. His tribunal was given to Dominican inquisitors. That didn't come until later on, huh? I always associated the Inquisition with Dominicans, they just got them now in the 1500s. And also a legal advisor, a good lawyer, a constable, a policeman, a prosecutor, and a large number of assistants. With the exception of the two Dominicans, all these were royal lay officials. The Spanish Inquisition was largely funded by confiscations, but these were not frequent or great. Indeed, even at its peak, the Inquisition was always just making ends meet. After the reforms, the Spanish Inquisition had very few critics. Staffed by well-educated legal professionals, it was one of the most efficient and compassionate judicial bodies in Europe. No major court in Europe executed fewer people than the Spanish Inquisition. I got to repeat that again, isn't that? No major court in Europe executed fewer people than the Spanish Inquisition. This was a time, after all, when damaging scrubs in a public garden in London carried the death penalty. Damaging shrubs. If you damaged shrubs in a public garden, you can get the death penalty in London. Across Europe, executions were everyday events, but not so with the Spanish Inquisition. In its 350-year lifespan, only about 4,000 people were put to the stake. Wow. So in the first 10 years, those 2,000 people died. And so in the next 340 years, Inquisition. When the first accusations of witchcraft surfaced in northern Spain, the Inquisition sent its people to investigate. These trained legal scholars found no believable evidence for witches' sabbaths, black magic, or baby roasting. It was also noted that those confessing to witchcraft had a curious inability to fly through keyholes. While Europeans were throwing women into bonfires with abandon, the Spanish Inquisition slammed the door shut on this insanity. What about the dark dungeons and torture chambers? The Spanish Inquisition had jails, of course, but they were neither especially dark nor dungeon-like. Indeed, as far as prison goes, they were widely considered to be the best in Europe. There were even instances of criminals purposely blaspheming so as to be transferred to the Inquisition's prisons. Like all courts in Europe, the Spanish Inquisition used torture, but did so much less often than other courts. Modern researchers have discovered that the Spanish Inquisition applied torture in only 2% of the cases. Each instance of torture was limited to a maximum of 15 minutes, and only 1% of these cases was torture applied twice, and never for a third time. So the inescapable conclusion is that by the standards of its time, the Spanish Inquisition was positively enlightened. It was the assessment of most Europeans until 1530. It was then that the Spanish Inquisition turned its attention away from the conversos and toward the new Protestant Reformation. The people of Spain and their monarchs were determined that Protestantism would not infiltrate their country as it had Germany and France. The Inquisition's methods did not change. Executions and torture remained rare, but its new target would forever change its image. By the mid-1700s, Spain was the wealthiest and most powerful country in Europe. King Philip II saw himself and his countrymen as faithful defenders of the Catholic Church. Less wealthy and less powerful were Europe's Protestant areas, including the Netherlands, northern Germany, and England. But they did have a potent new weapon, the printing press. Although the Spanish defeated Protestants on the battlefield in many areas, they would lose the propaganda war. These were the years when the famous Black Legend was forged. Innumerable books and pamphlets poured from northern presses accusing the Spanish Empire of inhumane depravity and horrible atrocities in the New World. Opulent Spain was cast as the place of darkness, ignorance, and evil. Although modern scholars have long ago discarded the Black Legend, it still remains very much alive today. Protestant propaganda that took aim at the Spanish Inquisition drew liberally from the Black Legend, and it had other sources as well. From the beginning of the Reformation, Protestants had difficulty explaining the 15th century gap between Christ's institution of his church and the founding of the Protestant churches. Catholics naturally pointed out this problem, accusing Protestants of having created a new church separate from that of Christ. Protestants countered that their church was the one created by Christ, but that it had been forced underground by the Catholic Church. Thus, just as the Roman Empire had persecuted Christians, so its successor, the Roman Catholic Church, continued to persecute them through the Middle Ages. Inconveniently, there were no Protestants in the Middle Ages, yet Protestant authors found them anyway in the guise of various medieval heresies. In this light, the medieval Inquisition was nothing more than an attempt to crush the hidden true church. The Spanish Inquisition, still active and extremely efficient at keeping Protestants out of Spain, was for Protestant writers merely the latest version of this persecution. Mixed liberally with the Black Legend, and you have everything you need to produce tract after tract about the hideous and cruel Spanish Inquisition. And so they did. Isn't that a different look at it, my friends? Let's take our last break here, and I have to share with you a little bit. But I hope that gives you a much different perspective on history and how the rich country of Spain was maligned. Oftentimes, poor places will turn the more wealthy place into the enemy. Might we be seeing that even with America today? People who want to see America prosper and stay strong, making America great again, should we say, that will then turn those who are not so wealthy to look at the United States as a great enemy, which it's not. So let's pray that we can get all of this stuff right, and especially as we learn history with more accurate lenses, appreciate how beautiful Catholicism has been. Obviously not perfect, but a great source of light and truly the instrument founded by Jesus Christ. Okay, well, let's take our last break here. I am Father Tom Coyes. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
New from EWTN Publishing, Jesus, the Master Psychologist. Listen to Him by Dr. Ray Guarendi. In these pages, Dr. Ray explores the teachings of both modern psychology and Jesus Christ to identify the therapy tools worth employing and those we should avoid. He helps us understand that every tool and counseling guideline worth pursuing can find its roots directly in the words of Christ. Dr. Ray's experience as a father of 10 and his mastery of the New Testament enable him to provide recommendations for dealing with numerous daily issues, including transforming your natural qualities into supernatural qualities, methods for overcoming jealousy and other passions, the rearing and benefits of raising problem children, and many others. Jesus, the Master Psychologist. Listen to Him by Dr. Ray Guarendi. Available now at EWTNRC.com. By Catholic, shop EWTNRC.com.
We are the students of St. Stan LaCosta Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560. 773-278-4560.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I hope that meditation, that wonderful article on the Spanish Inquisition by Thomas Madden, you can find him. He's still alive and still teaching. I'm not sure what school he's at, but he's a great Catholic historian. Okay, since we don't have much time left, and this Sunday is Father's Day, I'd like to share this little poem I put together. I was meditating on my own father, and I hope you could relate to it. I hope it makes some sense to you. It's called Half Right. It goes like this. Father, that's what we call you. Dad, when we want to get a little closer to you. Each year we are asked to consider what that means. Each year I grasp a bit more of a father's dreams. When I was small, I thought you controlled the world with all your might. Now I see that I was only half right. Indeed, you controlled my world, but the world stretched way beyond my sight. Now I see our father's seven petitions in a new light. And I figured out, even back then, that every rooster needs a precious hen. I called with pride the place where I lived, my house. Now I see I was only half right. For you bought the place of my rest with your sweat and blood, but never seemed to mind when I called what's yours mine. A father labors for this type of responsible love, a faith that wants to see that son discover the ways of a father above. I thought when Aldonza cried out to Don Quixote, I do not know mine. I thought it so strange. But now I see I was only half right. For it is not so strange to be in darkness. Truly, it's not funny. What's rare and wonderful is to love the man that mom calls honey. Dads are hard to figure out. Dads are hard to buy for. Too often they seem to annoy us. But all our family failures should teach us much more. I often hear how crucial it is to show up at the game. For let's face it, who doesn't like a dad to boost your fame? But now I see that this is only half right. Half the time he cannot show. It was I who played, and he who labored in yearning pain. I see how hard it is to pound the rocks. I see his absence was what gave me that gift that won't fit in a box. Everyone should have a father. Everyone should love a father. But everyone should love that man who squeezed your mother. Not as a superman or a divine provider, but as a man who struggles to give his all, and yes, stands beside her. For if you or if he loses the wisdom of the father's might, you will always be less, much less than half right. Happy Father's Day, everybody. And I hope we do give great honor to the wonderful man that were our fathers, whether they're still with us or with God in heaven. We pray for them. Let's remember we can and we should pray for all the souls of those who have gone before us. And offer masses, right? We should offer masses for those people. I think I particularly got some inspiration when I thought how, when talking to little children, and you hear them say, "Want to come over to my house?" And of course, all children say that. But isn't it a bit of an interesting reflection on parental love and the family love? The little child didn't pay one penny for that house, but the mother and father allow them to say, "It's my house." And of course, as people grow older, and there's a lot of adults now living with their parents, they still are allowed to live in their parents' house, but it's a strange thing of modern day. You who are living in your parents' house, especially if you're older and working, be especially grateful for that ability to say, "This is my house," even though you haven't paid for it yet. Hey, we didn't get to the letter on vaccines. I promise you I'll get to that. That topic is going to be around for a while. But God love you, and stay faithful, pray hard, offer your prayers to Almighty God, pray the rosary. We'll see you next time. This is Father Tom Coyce. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDC.
there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.